Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Audio Road. Welcome to the pit, politics in trucking. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be throwing out the issue of the day and then taking your calls and refereeing the discussion for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that takes the political topics of importance and relates them to the trucking industry. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. Once again, welcome to the pit, and here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember, to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyways. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to the pit. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa Campbell screening your calls will be here for the next hour. If you're listening to us online, you can join us live on the call right now by picking up your phone and dialing 347-884-8327. Once you're on that call, plenty of lines open. We've upgraded the system, lots of room. Once you're on that call, press 1 on your phone. And you'll get interrogated, screened by Lisa. She'll talk to you for a bit, and then we'll get you on the air. This is the pit, but it doesn't have to be politics. I have some things I want to talk about. We're going to start combining the pit with open lines, whatever you want to talk about. If it's trucks, business, numbers, politics, whatever it might be, open lines tonight. So jump in with whatever you've got. That phone number again, 347-884-8327. All right, so watching the news recently, actually reading the news, I'm not seeing this in a lot of places. A couple things kind of came together, and, you know, we talk about the fare tax a lot. I try to mention it on the show. We have some people who call and mention it on the show. We have a lot of discussions going on the website. Several things here relate back to the fare tax, but the first several things I'm going to talk about, they're not the fare tax directly. Here's the thing. If we look at the federal deficit for April of 2010, are we surprised? It's a record. 1 month, $82.69 billion. That's the deficit in April. It's 4 times higher than the deficit recorded in April of 2009, just a year ago. 4 times higher. You know, and when you're talking about billions of dollars, and then you multiply it by 4, I don't think many of us can even comprehend how much money that really is. The government's also managed to set another record, the longest string of monthly deficits in history, 19 straight months. 19 straight months of running deficits, and now we're talking about $82 billion in 1 month. Now, let's think about it. In the beginning, they blamed the deficits and the shortfalls on the Bush administration. But come on, let's look at the facts. It seems to me, I'm pretty sure that the Democrats have been in control of Congress since 07. That would be, 28 months, 29 months since the Democrats took control of Congress. They're the ones that approve spending. So of those 20, we'll call it 29 months, they've run deficits, 19 of those. It's time to start taking responsibility for their spending. You can't blame this on the prior administration anymore. Here's something that I have, you know, they're not talking much about that deficit, but here's something they are talking a lot about. And I keep seeing this headline and I keep hearing it on the news about taxes being at a historic low. You know what? I know a lot about taxes and I can't figure out where this is coming from, because taxes have not gone down. My taxes certainly haven't gone down. The owner operators that I deal with, their taxes haven't gone down. So how do they keep coming up with this number? Well, here's one of the problems with our tax system, and I've said this before. They can make any outrageous claim they want, and it's next to impossible to prove them wrong. So I did some digging to see how they came up with this number. And there's a couple things going on here. One is that because of the progressive tax system and all the tax credits, there are less people contributing to the overall tax bill. So that does drive the average down. That doesn't make it right. We have people who pay zero tax, and we have people who, without being on welfare, are really on welfare because they're paying no tax and getting money back from the federal government. That's just wrong. It doesn't work, and you can't continue doing that. That's one of the ways they're able to claim that the average tax bill is going down, but that's not the biggest. They're including sales and property taxes. This isn't just income tax they're talking about. Well, let's talk about property tax. Property values have plummeted. In the last 2.5 years, property values have dropped dramatically, which means property taxes on new assessments will also go down. So, yes, you're paying less in property tax. Sales tax. Why are we including this in here? The federal government – well, actually, the federal government, the Democrats trying to take credit for lowering taxes – the federal government has nothing to do with your property taxes and your sales tax. Those are state issues. So they really should only be including the federal income tax in this number if they're going to take credit for it. But this is how they can play with the numbers and make themselves look good. They had nothing to do with the real estate tax, but if they want to take credit for dropping home values, I guess we'll give them that one. Sales tax, yeah, we're collecting a lot less sales tax because the economy tanked. So is that really what they're taking credit for, the economy tanking? I could probably agree with them on that one. So taxes are not at historic lows for the average working middle class American, not even close. We're slightly up, depending on where you put the numbers on middle class. The so-called rich, which really doesn't, you don't have to earn a lot of money to be considered rich, their taxes are much higher. And we've got a group at the bottom that really doesn't pay any tax at all. And that's just not a good thing. So all of these things, the deficits, the way they play numbers with the taxes, they all can be brought back to the fair tax and how we could solve a lot of these problems. But here's one more. In this one, I'm not even sure where to begin, because this one can get so complicated, your eyes are just going to glaze over. My eyes glazed over trying to figure this one out. You know, we've been through Obamacare, we lost that one. What a horrible program that is going to be for our economy, and especially for small business. And I talked last week about the new requirement to issue 1099s to everybody. Everybody's going to have to issue 1099s to everybody else. What a huge drain and burden that's going to be on our small businesses and our economy. That was just one little paragraph in there. Out of 2,000 pages, there will be more to come. And as I learn more about what's in there and how it's going to affect us, small businesses, owner-operators, the trucking industry. I'll bring that to you as I find it. But set that aside for a minute, because now Obama and the Democrats are working on a new plan that has to do with retirement accounts. You know, in the health care plan, they made it mandatory for Americans to have health insurance, to buy it, and they made it mandatory for employers to provide it. Now they're looking to do the exact same thing with IRAs. They're in the new budget proposal, and again, if you think the healthcare bill is complicated, look at budget proposals and how much they can hide in there. There's a plan for automatic IRAs. It would require companies to offer workers automatic deductions into IRAs. Now, it's like a lot of things. On the surface, you think, well, what's the problem with that? It's not that big of a deal, but it really is. Small businesses should not be required by anybody, certainly not the federal government, to do this. If they want to offer it, let them. Why can't it be a choice of the employer? If I want to offer a plan to my employees, let me offer it. Don't force me to offer it. And then it just gets so complicated from there. I started to read this, and let me just read a little bit of this. I don't want your eyes to glaze over, but you'll just get an idea of how much more complication this is going to add to our currently ridiculous tax system. All right, here's some of the language from this proposal. Companies that don't offer a retirement plan may soon be required to enroll their employees in an IRA account. Required to enroll their employees in an IRA account. Under Obama's current proposal, 3% of employee pay would be direct deposited into a Roth IRA. That would be the default savings vehicle. Workers may opt out, choose a traditional IRA, or elect to save a different amount. Firms under 10 employees would be exempt. Employers could claim a temporary tax credit, automatically signing up their workers for the IRA for $25 per enrolled employee, up to $250 for 2 years. Another tax credit would be available to small businesses that begin their own retirement plan equal to 50% of the startup expenses for establishing or administering a new retirement plan, up to $1,000 a year for 3 years. The proposal would become effective in 2012. There's also going to be a government 401k match. They're proposing to extend the savers credit in 2011 to provide a 50% match on the first $500 of savings for individuals who earn less than $32,500. I could go on and on and on about the credits and the requirements and the limits and the dollar amounts. It's just making me crazy. I'm really glad that I don't do tax returns anymore. You know, I did them for 15 years, and I enjoyed it when I was doing it, but I can't even imagine. Well, I can imagine, because I still read all the same newsletters I used to read, trying to keep up with it. It is getting so complicated that there is no way anybody can guarantee you that your tax return is correct, and they got all your credits or they got all your deductions. It's just not going to happen. And starting in 2011 and beyond, based on what I'm seeing in these proposals, the code is going to get so complicated, I don't even know what to say. So that's my rant tonight. The deficit, the claim that the Democrats have lowered taxes to all-time lows, absolutely hogwash. And the federal government now with a new proposal about requiring employers to provide IRAs, all heading in the same direction. We really, really do need the fare tax. That would take care of all of this. Do you realize that one of the things I've tried to teach over the years, I have a section in the CMC about retirement savings and retirement accounts. And I used to spend almost 2.5 hours on retirement accounts because I wanted people to understand them. But in the last 5 years that I've been doing the CMC, they keep complicating them so much that I keep cutting the time down, because even in 2.5 hours, I can't make you understand all these limits. And when it comes right down to it, we could talk about IRAs, SEP IRAs, Roth IRAs, individual 401ks, KEOs, SEPs. I mean, there's all these retirement accounts, 403Bs. You know what? All of that and all of those regulations and all of that complication would go away under the fare tax. Throw it out. Doesn't exist anymore. You would be able to save for retirement any way that you wanted to. You wouldn't have to have a retirement account because your income wouldn't be taxed and your earnings wouldn't be taxed. We don't need retirement accounts anymore. Just go put your money anywhere you want and save it for retirement. We don't have to worry about the regulations. We don't have to worry about who gets a tax break and who doesn't, who's going to pay tax now, who's going to pay tax later. All that goes away. How simple. That's just retirement accounts. It's kind of mind-boggling how much we would be able to simplify our lives when it comes to money with just one, I know it's a big change, but just one change in the way we deal with the federal government and taxes. If you're on the call and you want to join us, if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, remember, this is the Pit, but you can talk about whatever you want tonight. Open phone lines. If we want to skip politics, talk about trucks, we can do that. If you want to talk about issues, whether it's straight politics or issues in the trucking industry, we can do that. Press 1. Lisa will screen your call, and I'm going to start getting to those calls right now. If you are listening online and you want to join us on the phone call, pick up your phone, dial 347-884-8327. That'll get you into the call, and then you can press 1, and we'll get to your calls. Let's go to Indiana. Carrie, welcome to the program. Uh-oh. Hold on 1 second. What's going on here? Let me try that again.
Hello.
There you go. Now we've got you.
Got me? All right. Got it. I got 4 words for you. Arizona has it right.
Boy, what is with the rest of the country and the whole Arizona thing? I really don't get it. Why is this such a big deal?
Well, it's because they don't want our laws enforced.
Yeah, but here's what I don't get. Those laws have been on the books forever. What is different about the Arizona law right now? What could a law enforcement official under this new Arizona law do that a federal official couldn't already do?
Nothing.
What's changed? Nothing.
Nothing. So, nope, except for the enforcement. Every time we try to enforce a law, people get their hair on the back of their neck standing up because they're enforcing a law that they passed.
If we're not going to enforce the laws, why do we keep writing them then?
Exactly. Cut the Congress back to 6 months a year, go up there and do the budget, and go back home.
And why don't we do this, just to simplify things? Because I just really think everything is getting way too complicated. So let's do this. For every new law they write, they have to get rid of 5 old laws that nobody's enforcing anyway.
That worked for me. Hey, did you hear what Obama said?
At, at that pace, hold on one second, at that pace it will only take them about 50 more years to get rid of all the ridiculous laws that nobody enforces.
Right, including the immigration laws that nobody enforces. And when they try to enforce them, they get mad about it. You know, the raids on the companies, they were working in 2008. Numbers from the Border Patrol said that people were leaving this country almost as fast as they were coming in when we were raiding the employers. The E-Verify system is working. I don't get it. But did you hear what Obama said today?
No, what did he say today?
He said that people like me, my basic attitude is if the Democrats lose, we win. After they drove the car in the ditch, made it as difficult as possible for us to pull it back, now they want the keys back. No, they can't drive. We don't want to have to go back in the ditch. Well, if you look at the history and not try to rewrite it like the mainstream media does, when the Democrats took control in 2007, we were being told that there's nothing wrong with the housing industry. Barney Frank said, oh, there's nothing to see here, all the while paying off his buddies in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They got rid of the uptick rule and the program trading rule in the stock market. That's exactly what's causing the volatility in the market right now. And I truly believe that Friday, last Friday, was a outright theft of wealth by whoever's pulling the strings up there. Anybody that lost 50% of their value, they get a pass. But anybody that lost 50% of their value, oh, too bad. Those trades are going to stick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a mess. Half the time I don't even know where to start. The whole Freddie and Fannie thing, there are so many articles that we could go back to the 90s and people were writing about what was going to happen because what the government was doing with Freddie and Fannie. And why do those programs even exist? The government has no business being in the mortgage business. Every time the government gets involved in business, they screw it up. Every time.
Yep. I've got two favorite sayings. I know you've read them. Liberals will always accuse you of exactly what they themselves are guilty of, and liberalism always creates the exact opposite of its stated intentions. Nobody has ever been able to prove them wrong to me.
No, because that's absolutely correct. We have to get the government out of business. We have to get the government out of so many things, and you know, spending is just absolutely out of control. The numbers are just mind-boggling. In 1 year, you know, when I talk about business and I talk about whether it's profit and loss statements, whether it's fuel mileage, whether it's the freight indexes, one of the most important numbers we always look at is this period compared to the same period last year. Like if I'm looking at my 30-day fuel mileage average for April, well, let's compare it to April of last year because we have cycles. The weather's usually about the same April to April, so we're comparing the same weather. The freight volumes are usually about the same, so it's always a good way to compare things. Well, if we compare the deficit this April to just 1 year ago, it's up four times. Four times.
Yep.
That is insane.
It is.
I mean, that would be like saying, let me even try to figure it, see if I can do this. If we compare that to fuel mileage, I can't even make the numbers work. Because when deficits go up, that would be like our fuel mileage going down. So let's do this. Let's say that if our fuel cost for this year, let's bring it back to a month since we were comparing months. Roughly $5,000 was my fuel cost for the month last April. That would be like this April my fuel cost went to $20,000. I'd be out of business.
Right. Yeah, you would in a heartbeat.
I'd be done. 30 days, and I'd be history. I wouldn't be able to survive 2 months with increases like that. And the government's doing it month after month.
Yep. The Bank of England says that we face the same problem as Greece. I wonder what the answer for the progressives are going to be when we're out in the streets rioting like Greece and France.
Well, they're going to fix that. They're just going to give us a VAT tax, and that'll fix. Oh, wait a minute. Greece has one, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yep.
Ah, yeah. So obviously, that's not going to fix anything.
Nope. Carbon tax. What's going to happen to the manufacturing? What's going to happen to trucking?
Hey, you know, I see the ATA has come out, and I know a lot of people get all freaked out about the ATA and think that they're our enemy, but the ATA has come out really strongly against cap and trade.
They should. Everybody in America should come out strongly. My electric bill is going to go up by 40% because of this cap and trade.
I can't imagine what's going to happen to diesel costs. And, you know, there's this penalty that's being imposed on burning carbon fuels. Cap and trade, cap and tax, whatever you want to call it, is another program that's so complicated, the average person, and I put myself in that group, isn't going to be able to understand the what's going to happen. I don't get it. I mean, I know that it's bad, and I can tell you some of the things that will happen. It's way too complicated to try to figure out all the implications. But
well, they made there's a way so that you couldn't follow the money to Al Gore.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I know.
Yeah.
And so many other – well, they complicate everything for, you know, the same reasons. But, you know, there are some industries that I guess use discretionary energy that they could possibly cut back on. There's not going to be a lot of cutting back in the trucking industry. And all of the implications, the ways that we would cut back, unless it's, you know, this is kind of screwy for me because I've been teaching people to cut back for 15 years. But that's voluntary. That's not government imposed. It's not some complicated penalty system because that never works. I mean, look at what they've done to the industry already trying to clean up the environment. The last 10 years of them trying to clean up the emissions in truck engines have killed our fuel mileage.
Yes, very
so
bad.
So how did that make any sense?
It doesn't. Liberalism always creates the exact opposite of its stated intentions. They said they're
going to clean up
the air by putting these DPF filters on our truck, and what did they do? They caused us to burn more fuel.
Yeah. So how does that help the environment?
It does not.
Contrary and how does
to
it help?
Belief, we are not ready to roll over and allow us to become a socialist nation. Jamestown failed as a socialist community. It wasn't until they gave ownership to people that it succeeded.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's what made the country so great. And, you know, there are example after example. When we look back at healthcare, all of the evidence was staring us in the face. Massachusetts already tried it, and it failed.
Exactly.
All the evidence was there.
The death panels. They kept the mainstream media kept telling us, it's called the death panels. It's called a commission.
Yeah, right.
But the mainstream media kept telling everybody, oh, they're lying about the death panels. They're lying about the death panels. It's in the law. Old people are going to die because of government health care.
And you know
and
what?
No recourse.
Now, and you know what? It all comes back to the same thing. And I just looked up and I see I've got a lot of questions. So I'm going to move on. Good stuff as usual. The details didn't matter, though. The death panels, all that stuff, none of it mattered. What it really came down to, and I wish we could have kept that argument on track, was the bill was unconstitutional. They can't force it. Well, they can. They're going to try to force us to buy health care. That should have been the whole argument. Not that it would have mattered, but let's see. Let's go to Nebraska. Henry, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How you doing?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
Just a few questions about the brokers. You know, when you book a load with a broker, how much percentage is a good number for them to keep, you know, of what the load is paying? There is like a standard percentage?
Yeah, well, I'm going to answer sarcastically first, but there's some truth in this. It depends on who you're talking about. If I'm the broker, do you want to know what a good percentage for me to keep is? As much as I possibly can.
Right, right. I'm talking the other way. You know, if you're the driver.
Well, if I'm the owner-operator or the carrier and I'm dealing with the broker, then a good number for them to keep is as little as I can possibly negotiate for them to be able to keep. Now, I'll tell you the average in the industry for last year on all the broker loads moved was about 15.6%. That was a survey done last year on the average broker load that was moved. The broker took about 15.6% off the load.
Okay. You see, recently I got some information from Landstar, and they're paying to the BCOs 65% of what the law is paying. So they get to keep 35% of, you know, of what the law is paying. Don't you think that's a little bit too high for them to keep? No?
No, look at all. One of the things you have to do is you have to look at who's keeping what percentage and what they're keeping it for. Now, you could probably go out and find a broker to work as a sales agent for you for maybe 10%. And that would seem like that's a lot better deal than what Landstar's offering. But we got to figure out what kind of freight they're going to get, what the rate's going to be. That's the complicated part. If they're just going to go out and find us garbage freight, then, you know, we're still going to make less. You've got much more risk involved by being out on your own, because what if somebody doesn't pay you? If you can't afford to handle your cash flow, no cash flow for 30 or 60 or 90 days, now you have to factor your freight bills. There's another 5%. You have to spend time finding the freight. Where does that time come from? You have to spend time invoicing the freight. Where does that time come from? You have to spend time collecting on freight bills and following up on freight bills to make sure you get paid on them. That's a lot of time. So when you look at what is being provided, no, I don't think it is an unreasonable amount. I think that when you look at their rates and their system and what it offers and how much their owner operators are making, I think it's a pretty darn good system. They're also providing the trailer. They're providing the primary liability and the cargo insurance. They have one of the best discount programs I've ever seen as far as fuel, tires, maintenance, truck, equipment. I mean, their discount programs are some of the best in the industry, so there's a big savings there. It's really, I mean, it's complicated. You have to sit down and look at a lot of numbers to find out what the real value is. But I've been working with Landstar for, well, it's been over 12 years. And if I didn't believe in their system, I wouldn't still be promoting them as a company. I mean, I really do like their system.
All righty. Well, thanks a lot for your info.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. And you could compare that and say, you know, the broker's getting 15.6%, and that's fine. I mean, if you want to pay just that, but remember, that's an average, so you've got to be able to negotiate with brokers in order to keep what you're going to pay them down as low as possible, and then you still have all those other things to take care of. Not to say that you can't do it that way and make more money. You might be able to. There are a lot of different ways to run the business. Really depends on how much work and risk you want to take. Let's go to Ontario this time. Ben, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Great show so far tonight.
Thank you.
Just wanted to make a quick comment. I know you were trying to find some information on the weight ratings of the XZ A2 energy tires.
Yes.
I don't have any actual facts or figures, but I have noticed that the fuel terminal that I load at every week, one of the large fleets that hauls 140,000 pounds on B trains, uses those on their 14,000 pound front axle. XZ A2 energies. Just about all of the trucks that I've seen in there this week have had that tire now that I've been paying attention for it.
That's interesting. I've got a contact at Michelin, and I've got it on my list, and I keep meaning to call them. I'm going to put a big star on this and stick it right in the middle of my desk so that I call tomorrow and find out what the deal is on that, because it kept changing, and I'd get one thing from my tire dealer, and then I'd hear something from somebody on the radio, and I kept meaning to follow up with Michelin on it. But that's interesting if they're running it in a heavy haul operation like that.
Yeah, it's definitely, and a safety-orientated one as well. It's all hazmat and whatnot. So. One last thing I just wanted to get your opinion on, and you can let me go. I'll just sit and listen. But if the fair tax sounds pretty good. I haven't read all of the details on it, got through it yet, but from what I've heard, I definitely agree. It's miles ahead of what we've got now. I often wondered what would happen if the tax system was as simple as just on every dollar that's traded, with absolutely no exceptions, there's a 1% tax. 1% on every transaction that's made. Would that not generate way more than enough money to get the country straightened out and have a surplus again? And I'll just sit and listen to your opinion on that, if you don't mind.
Got it. Okay, will do. Here's the thing. Taxes, our economy, is a very complicated system. There's no question about it. Our tax system is outrageously complicated. So I've seen a lot of good ideas over the years and things that look good on the surface, and this may be one of them. I don't know, because there are so many things that have to be taken into account. Just to give you an idea, and I may not get this number exactly right. If our fair tax ambassador was on the call, he might be able to help me out with this. I could go look it up. But the group that came up with the idea of the fair tax, they didn't just write it down and propose it and say, here, this sounds good. They hired tax firms. They hired economists. They hired universities. I'm going to say they spent somewhere between $10 and $20 million to have this proposal researched. That's a lot of money, but that's how in-depth their research was. And it's kind of funny when other groups or other people come out and say, well, the fair tax isn't going to work because of this. And they've done so little research into it that they really end up looking kind of ignorant. And many of them, I don't think, understand how much time, energy, money, resources have been put into researching every possible consequence of the fair tax and what it would do. So along the way, part of that money was, a big part of that money was developing the fair tax into what it is, looking at all the other proposals, looking at flat taxes or, you know, an idea like this. And on the surface, those ideas look great. But I have to believe in this, what they came up with, because they put so much money into looking at all the ways. They stepped back and said, look, the way that we fund our federal government right now doesn't work. It's horrible. It's getting worse all the time. What can we do? How can we fund the federal government at its current rate. We're not cutting revenue. We're going to fund it at its current rate. How do we do that? How do we keep it simple, and how do we keep it fair? And that's what all the money and time and research was designed to do, to look at all the possibilities. So I do it sometimes too. I sit back and go, well, why don't we just do this? That's what they did. That's what they looked at, and this is what they came up with. So I'm pretty well convinced this is the best system that anybody's going to come up with. Now the challenge becomes, how do we get it done? And, you know, all I can do is keep talking about it, keep recommending it to people, keep – maybe what I'll do is I'll – I don't know. I'll think of something. I wish I could get more people to listen to the audio book on the fair tax. Maybe I need to do some giveaways or something and then get people to share it and keep passing that stuff around. I'll come up with some ideas. Let's go to Minneapolis this time. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
I have a 06 T600 with C13 insert in it, and it's going through about a gallon of oil every 800 miles. It wasn't too bad until probably the last month it's really taken off. I was a little bit undercapitalized when we first started about 8 or 9 months ago, but that got all taken care of, and it was going good. And I'd say over about the last month, I've everything that could break has broken, so I'm wondering if we should just trade it off or in-frame it.
Wow. How many miles are on it?
532,000. And I know that the C13s are notorious for oil consumption, but I don't know if I just trade this one off, and I figure I'd be taking about a $10,000 hit trading it, and just, you know, buy one and, you know, get the extended warranty, because like I said, with all these repair bills I've had, I mean, my maintenance costs have just been absolutely through the roof.
Yeah, and here's what I've found, you know, over the years, that when a truck is like this, when the maintenance costs are high, very seldom does that ever change. You know, I've had so many trucks over the years where they would start to cost me a lot of money, and I would keep thinking, well, you know, I've got this many things fixed, there's nothing left to break. And then something
there's
else would and then it almost seems like you'd go back through the cycle again. It's like once I've had a truck that starts costing a lot of money, it almost always keeps costing a lot of money. So I think I would really lean heavily towards getting out of this truck. I mean, it absolutely needs an in-frame. There's no question about it. And if you're having all these other maintenance problems, I don't know that this is a truck I would want to keep.
Oh, and now say that so I figure I'll probably get around between 20 and 25 on a trade-in. Do you think that if I went down to like a $20,000-$25,000 truck, that it'd still be a step in the right direction, or should I just take on a bigger truck payment and get something that, you know, within, you know, I made up my mind that I'm going to get an extended warranty just because, I mean, like I said, everything was going good and it wiped out every, you know, cushion that I had in my maintenance fund.
Right.
I mean, we're about 17 cents a mile in maintenance right now.
I wouldn't trade up to a bigger truck. I would try to do what I call almost a lateral trade, like what you said, almost same value. Because we don't want it. When you're in a position like this, we don't want to take on more debt. We want to get
right.
We want to get stabilized again. Now, what you want to be really careful about is getting the right $25,000 truck. You know, do all those inspections that I talk about, the front end and the engine and, you know, dynos and oil samples. And we want to do everything we possibly can to make sure we're not going to get another maintenance problem. And really, I mean, I can buy a 2000 model truck with 1,000,000 miles on it that will be less trouble-free than some 08s that I could buy right now. It really
right.
doesn't have as much to do with the year of the truck as the care and some other things. So your goal would be to buy the least expensive truck you can get away with that's going to give you a couple years of good service so that you can get back
okay.
on your feet again.
All right. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. And let's see. I am off to Minnesota this time. Matt, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin.
Hey there. What's
so
up?
Your opening of the show, you know, is right up my alley. I'm a numbers guy, and when we start talking about money, I get excited. So
good. What's on mind tonight?
I mean, you know, if I was a politician and was running for office and I told you that I was running on a platform that, you know, elect me and I'm going to reduce our deficit, what would you think that meant?
I would think you're going to reduce our deficit. That's pretty straightforward.
Oh, but if a politician says that, all that means is that they're not going to have as much deficit this year.
Yeah, that's exactly
it
right.
It doesn't mean the total number is going to go down. It's just not going to go up as much.
No, using the example, you know, this April, the deficit is up four times higher than it was last April. So
yep.
technically, what you just said, next April it could go up three times again, and that politician
and
could say, but I lowered the deficit.
I reduced the deficit, yeah.
That's right.
We didn't go as far
yeah.
in debt this year.
That's right. It's only up three times over last year. Then, you know, it's not up four times anymore.
Cause, you know, if you listen to a lot of them when they're on the campaign trail, that's how they word it. That they're not going to go as far in debt as they did the last time, and which obviously that isn't even true. So, but
well, and that's how they push a lot of their tax proposals too, by saying
yep.
the same kind of things. This will lower the tax. Well, it doesn't really lower the tax.
Yeah, because I mean, what you were talking about there with tax revenues being the lowest, I believe. I don't know if you got that from the USA Today. It was either Monday or Tuesday's paper. I haven't seen
yeah.
it, but Dave Ramsey was talking about it too. And it's, you know, about how tax revenues are lower and, you know, they don't understand why because taxes are lower. Well, you know, it's an income tax. Incomes are down. That only means tax revenue has to be down. I mean,
well, yeah, we have a lot of unemployed people.
It doesn't take anybody with, you know, more than like kindergarten math grit skills to figure that out.
Wait a minute. Is this fuzzy math?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you look at the way the numbers were calculated, it was some income tax, but it was also sales tax and real estate tax. Well, income tax is going to be down. We have 10% unemployment. Of course
yep.
it's down. Nobody's working. They're not paying any tax. Real estate values plummeted, so tax revenues are down, and sales are down. The economy's been down, so of course taxes are lower, but they haven't lowered the tax rate. They haven't improved our tax system, but that's what they try to make it sound like. They try to make
yeah.
it sound like they've done this wonderful thing by lowering our taxes. You know, this almost goes back to, you know, what I used to say all the time is, as somebody who's in business, I want to pay the most tax possible.
Exactly.
Now, I know that sounds crazy, but given our current tax code, as much as I hate it, if we have to live by the code, and we do, I don't want to pay the least amount of tax. I want to be the person who pays the most tax.
Yeah, because the more, the higher, you know, and you know, we got to get all of our terms right, because, you know, it comes down to adjusted gross income, which, you know, is a combination of gross income and then, you know, your tax deductions and all that once you get down to the bottom number. that's your tax base, and then, yeah, so whoever pays the most is the guy that also should have the most money in his hands.
That's right. That's right. Now, here's the other thing that I've been thinking about, because we've been focusing so much on and talking so much about the fair tax, is how are, when we talk about business and money and finances and retirement accounts and health insurance and adjusted gross income, what I got thinking about was the majority of the complication in our financial system, when we talk about business and profit and loss statements and all those other things, that all of the complication stems because of our tax code. Business and numbers aren't really that complicated.
No.
It's our tax code that complicates everything.
Yeah. Well, you know, you were talking about with retirement there and that being mandated.
Right.
You know, obviously, it sounds great on the surface. And you know how I know you would support this too, the same as I would. I would absolutely be for that and replace the Social Security.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if we could use that.
If we do away, you know, what's that, 12.5% or 12.6 or whatever, you know, if we did away with that percentage that employers are already responsible for and took 12% of everybody's income and mandated that on private investment, that I'm all for that.
I would be all for that as well. You know, there's another tie-in to this. The problem is it starts to become so complicated that it becomes too difficult to follow, and that is there are other proposals that this administration has been talking about as far as, and it's kind of hard to describe how they're going to do it, but they're really working towards taking this retirement money and buying government debt with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Social Security has actually been so overfunded for the last, 50 years, 60 years going on now, that, you know, they've been taking money out of it, and, you know, they've always been saying Social Security is going to go broke. We're finally at that point where Social Security is actually breaking even, and because they've been stealing money out of it for so long, now they got to start putting the money back, and that's where the problem lies.
Yeah.
But
So you know, if we look at business in general, if I look at your business or mine or any owner operators, to do a profit and loss statement is pretty simple. You gross this much. Here's your expenses. Here's what's left over. I mean, that really is nothing more than fourth grade math.
Yeah.
Maybe it's second grade math. I don't even know. I can't remember where I learned this stuff.
You know, since both me and you are set up so well and the spreadsheet's already been written, I could have my kindergartner probably enter in the computer and have it done.
Right. That's pretty basic stuff. Where it starts to get complicated, it all has to do with our tax code that complicates it. Like you just said, adjusted gross income. That's not a business term. That's not really an accounting term. That's only a tax term. And it's a complicated tax term to figure out what it really means and how you get to it. Yours is completely different from mine, which is completely different from somebody else's. That's where all the complication comes in.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with retirement accounts. I never realized. You know, when I try to teach the whole retirement account thing, I gave up trying to teach all of the accounts. And what I did was just say, look, I've been through all the accounts. Here's the one you want, and here's the one you need. And I'm not even going to try to explain why, because it would take me 3 hours, and I don't want to waste the time to explain why an individual 401k is better than a SEP IRA or better than a simple IRA or better than a traditional IRA. I could talk for hours trying to explain all the differences, and then it dawned on me that the only reason we have to have all these rules and all these complications around retirement savings is because of our tax code. If you get rid of the tax code and you implement the fair tax, then there's no such thing as a retirement account anymore.
Yeah. And
you just save your money wherever and when, however you want. There are no rules anymore. You just, all you have to do then, now retirement savings becomes really easy. I can break it down to one sentence. Spend less than you earn.
Well,
right?
There's a lot of people have a problem with that.
Well, I know.
But that's,
part of,
that's what needs to be taught.
I really believe that part of the problem comes in, and not all of it. I mean, a big part of the problem is just our, it's just that we haven't been taught how to manage money, and we spend too much, and we buy too many things. But part of it is the complication. Part of it is that people want to start saving, and they either get bad advice, or they don't understand the advice, or it's too complicated, and they kind of give up. I know it wouldn't fix everybody, but if we could just say, look, there's no such thing as retirement accounts anymore. There are no tax credits. There are no tax deductions. You make this much. If you only spend this much and you keep what's left over every year, when you get to retirement, you're going to have money there. That's pretty darn simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you brought up the fair tax, and since Hugh isn't on the line tonight, I'll take his place.
Okay.
And
good.
You want an idea how to get this out there better? And how,
yes.
We could try to get everybody to at least look at it and try to understand it, and then they can form their own opinion. Well, maybe the government should force it. We should have a subsidy that every, you know, graduating high school class has to read the book and do a report on it.
Nice idea. the problem is, the only people standing in the way of getting this done are the politicians. They're the only ones who would not benefit from this. The economy would benefit, the individuals would benefit, business would benefit, everybody except the politicians, because it takes away so much of their power. So now the problem is getting it into our government-run schools requires the politicians again.
Yeah, well, the gold party would solve a lot of that, too.
There you go. I know. It all comes together. It all ties in. We just have to keep pushing to get it done.
Yeah, this November, I just, you know, and no prediction on what's going to happen, but I tell you what, I can't wait to see what does happen.
I know. I just hope that we can somehow come up with a coherent consensus on how we go about doing it. You know, so many people are so adamant about making change, there's so many different ideas floating around that I just hope we don't cancel out all of them because we can't come up with
the only
with
thing
one
I am worried about is, you know, we had so many people so mad at Bush and, you know, the right, and I mean, really, you know, I consider myself a conservative, but I don't consider myself a Republican, that,
right.
You know, we haven't had conservative government in probably my lifetime, but I completely understand how Barack Obama, you know, won by the margin he won by, because people were mad at the right, and now there's possibly going to be a huge swing back to the right because they're getting mad at the left. But, you know, unless we elect the right people, and I don't mean that by right side of the aisle, it's the correct people you know, to solve the problem instead of just swinging back and forth from not electing the correct person, but trying to get the wrong person out. We need to, our election process needs to be more thorough on who we're electing, not just because they're not the wrong person.
Exactly. Hey, we are all out of time. I want to thank everybody for joining me. I was going to talk about what we're doing tomorrow night on Trends in Tech, but you'll just wait for the email tomorrow. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.